Welcome to another Afghan Wow Aviation Consulting Company podcast hosted by Paul Ritchie. The reason for this, another Afghan produced podcast, is to bring interesting and relevant news and information to podcast listeners as to things and issues that matter to the aviation industry. For those of us fortunate enough to be part of this industry, we can say that it is never routine or boring, and that all of its participants need to be able to turn on a dime as we navigate through new challenges and opportunities as they arise. Today's show, we're honored to be able to welcome my good friend, Naren Doshi. Naren, welcome to the show. Can you share with us, to the listeners, something about yourself and your long history in aviation?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Thanks for inviting me to this podcast, giving me an opportunity to share some of my thoughts and experiences in the aviation industry. I have been involved in the aviation industry for more than 45 years. It's been a long time with my background in engineering and business administration. I was involved in various aspects of airport planning, but one of the including the major development at Pearson Airport, the $4 billion airport project, which took place in late 90s and early 2000. I was fortunate to be involved in as a director of planning and involved in the overall planning of the airport, building a new airport on the top of the existing airport. With that also, I've had some experience consulting with other airports around the world, including Dubai Airport, Edmonton Airport, Calgary Airport. So it's been a challenging experience, you know, working in this aviation industry over the last few years. So, and recently also, I've been involved in academic field, teaching airport planning, design and engineering, at the academic institution at the Seneca's Aviation College of it, as well as University of Toronto Civil Engineering Department. So that gives you a bit of a background on what my background experience is, Paul.
So. Well, for the benefit of the listeners, I've had the pleasure and joy to work with Naren back in the days at the Greater Toronto Airports Authority. And one of the biggest challenges that Naren helped spearhead was to get a fourth runway or fifth runway to build, first in the north and second north-south and another additional east-west. And that was challenging times to be able to get the members of the public and different governments and what have you on side. And you and the team were able to do that and actually get these runways built on time and within budget, if I recall correctly. And then, of course, as you said earlier, to spearhead the development of the growth of the airport to a new terminal and on the top of an operating airport. So thanks, Naren, for being on the show today. A person with your background has a lot to offer. So let's start off with our first question for you, if I may. And that is, you know, COVID. You know, we all talk about COVID these days, but COVID has impacted all of us, including, of course, the aviation industry. As a seasoned industry veteran, as you are an expert, what will the industry need to do, from your point of view, to not only survive, but to meet the needs of an ever-changing society, be it goods, business, or leisure travel?
Sure. Definitely, I think the aviation industry has been impacted by COVID tremendously, as we see that in the some of the statistics that last year, in the first year of the COVID, airport traffic around the world was down 90% from the, you know, the current base. So it was a big shock to the industry. And but you think back about it, I guess a little bit in 2001, September, when the terrorist attack happened in New York, air travel was dealt by a massive blow by the 11th September attacks. And the effect lasted for a lot, quite a few years, you know. Mm-hmm. At that time, I think just after September 9th, we were concerned about whether traffic will come back. I get traffic did come back. It was sort of impact was a ripple effect, I guess, compared to what happened, what COVID will do. You know, that time the traffic dropped off. In 4 to 5 years, traffic did come back. And the airlines and the aviation industry managed the downturn by cost-cutting, furloughs, consolidation of the airlines, and shelving some of the aggressive expansion plans. But the airline industry bounced back. But now with COVID, I think with this such a drop in traffic, it's a something really major we need to consider. Industry will, of course, recover, definitely, but what the industry will be in future, it remains to be seen, right? With all the pressures of the climate change and impact the aviation has on the climate, I think people also need to sort of start thinking about it. So it's a thought process going to be how are we going to bounce back? It will bounce back, but there will be going to be the same in terms of the business, leisure travel, and also the freight. One good thing has happened in the COVID, I think, is the freight business has been pretty solidly good, has done well. And I think that's the only good side of it is so.
Absolutely. Let's change focus for a second. And I think you're absolutely right what you talked about is, I mean, it's hard to tell, 9/11, of course, was a key milestone, a very unfortunate one in the aviation industry, above and beyond the terror attack itself, and how COVID is driving change. But let's talk about the next generation of people, young people that are entering the aviation workforce. They appear to be, to many people anyway, more transitory about their career aspirations and lifestyle choices. How might the industry need to attract and retain enough skilled employees, pilots, and frontline customer service team members? What do you think about that?
Paul, the aviation industry has some attraction for people. People have always been attracted to the aviation industry, wanting to know what goes on and also be part of it. Even some of the students I teach, talking to them, I think they have that aspirations to be part of the aviation industry. So I think the attraction towards the aviation industry does happen. The challenge, I think, for the industry of personnel, I think, is to how to first to attract them, definitely. That's one of the big thing it is, and make them attractive, and also how to retain the customers. In terms of the attracting, it's part of the process, of course. Various professional organizations in aviation are providing a lot of training and courses to attract different people and make them aware of what the aviation industry is all about. There are universities in USA, in Canada, UK, who provide these courses in airport planning, engineering, and operations to make people aware and understand what the industry is. But secondly, I think also it's the industry needs to provide good benefits. I think some of the employees, especially in the pilots and the frontline customer service members, need to be provided with some very stable environment, stable benefit environment, which will keep people in the industry. I think last few years has been very challenging, as I indicated, after September 2001, industries try to cut corner by furloughs and reducing the members' pays, which created a bit of a negative environment in terms of stability in the airport industry. But I think airport industry, aviation industry is here to stay. And I think people also would want that. So airlines and other, and for aircraft manufacturers, will have to do to attract and retain those skilled employees, like any other industry. See, currently there is a environment where there is a lot of competition for jobs from different, and the young people like to keep and move around to go for the better opportunities. So it will be very interesting how the aviation industry attracts and retains the employees over long term. So,
I think one of the key messages you just made was, listen, aviation, you need to compete for good employees, and you can't cheat, or you can't be cheap if you're going to keep people, or if you're going to attract the right people, and if you're going to be innovative and creative as you go forward and build it into your culture, I guess, right? As you said, people want stability, and they want to know that there's a career to grow into. And as you also indicated, you know, aviation is still a very interesting industry. It's not like working in the factory, right? And each day is different. No 2 days are the same. And hopefully that will appeal to the younger generation along the lines that you just articulated. So let's change focus for a second here and talk about your earlier life at a major airport like Toronto Pearson. At Toronto Pearson, you helped develop an airport master plan. Are airport master plans still important given the events of the last 18 months? And if so, should master plans be revisited? And if so, in what way?
Yes, I was fortunate enough to sort of been involved in two different master plans in preparation of the two master plans at Pearson Airport. The important one being in the late 90s, when the airport development program was underway. So, as I tell people, the airport master plan is the most important document for any airport organization, which allows the management, guides that in management in terms of how to proceed in some of the development plans, also in terms of how to finance the airport, how to communicate with the airlines, all the concessioners, all the other stakeholders, as well as the public. So airport master plan is a very one of the major document for the airport. And normally at any airport, major airports in Canada and around the world, master plans are normally visited every year just to review in view of the current situation, current changes, if any changes should be done. Because master plan provides you the guideline in terms of the timeline, in terms of development, the new facilities, what you're going to be requiring and when. So that yearly review allows us to management to modify this schedule if required. And normally all the major airports also review in a major way master plan every 5 years. And that's the time when all the stakeholders, airline, concessioners, government agency, public, aircraft manufacturers, all are involved doing this major master plan updates. So given the current situation now, I think thus a master plan needs to be revisited in, I think, a major way. Once the COVID situation gets a little bit better under control in a year or so, I think the master plan should be revisited in a major way, in consultation with the airlines, aircraft manufacturers, as well as the public, in terms of where the airport should be going. With the major downturn in traffic, some of the expansion plans need to be revisited as well, and put up a reschedule so that's something is very important. So, but also operationally, some of the changes will be required to post-COVID environment, which needs to be incorporated in during the review of the master plan.
Naren, is a master plan also important for a medium or a small size airport?
Yes, it is important for any airport. Any airport in the master plans are important document to guide to manage and schedule your development processes in terms of operational ways. It's an overview of the airport, what are the connectivity of different facilities are. Master plan provides this connect various facilities, and one of the challenges always is trying to keep the balance in terms of developments of the air side and the terminal side, and the master plans ensures that there is a constant balance between the two subsystems. And any small airports also, or a medium-sized airport also, would be benefit by having a master plan, which allows them to prepare the forecast and have a development plan for airport facilities, airside, terminal, and a groundside facility. So, and also sometimes in the for financing of the major projects, master plan provides a good document to for the financial community, whether to provide any financial capital for development.
So I guess your message is well, it is loud and clear. Master plans are crucial to help guide the airport into the future, to be able to provide some sort of financial reassurance to different investors or bankers or owners or operators of the airport, and to get the most out of the asset you possibly can, right? I mean, an airport brings a lot of economic benefits to the community that should never be underestimated. And so are economic benefits ever included in a master plan to help people understand, or is that wise to do so?
Yeah, master plan, I think it gives an overall, overview of where the airport is going to be going in future, but also trying to provide the community some of the benefits of the airports are in currently in the future. So the master plan document also does economic benefits of the current airport and the future airports, and which is a very important segment of the master plan. Reason being that it convinces a local government agencies as well as a community to understand how valuable the airport is to the community. Some of the jobs people depend on, some of the benefits in terms of the attracts travelers, visitors to the city area. The master plan provides that guideline for other communities as well. In terms of the hotel industry, they also give a better understanding of where the traffic forecast is going to be and what the need going to be for the future hotel requirements. So this master plan provides them a good understanding of.
Wow. So it's amazing how many people it impacts, right? The master plan is wide and diverse and needs to inform a lot of people. A lot of people have to provide input into a master plan to ensure that it's relevant and useful for all parties involved. So speaking about the master plan, going beyond that, we talk about planning for the future. And we know that the concern for the environment continues to ramp up. Aviation, given its high profile, is seen by many as a target for change or a need for change. What can and should the industry do, be it an airport or an airline, to address this matter in a sustainable, real, and cost-effective manner? What do you think about that?
Airport in current, I think we had this COP26, and there were a lot of discussions on GHG, greenhouse emissions issues. And as one of the players, aviation industry plays a vital role in this discussion. Some people wonder why and how come aviation becomes a big player in these discussions on this global environment issues. As such, the aviation industry contributes something like 3% to the carbon dioxide emission. So it's not a major proportion. But however, I think the concern it is that airline industry has been doing a tremendous job in trying to reduce improve the fuel efficiency of the aircraft. Over the last 40 years, if you see from 97 to 2007, something like 70% reduction in fuel efficiency has been achieved in the aircraft manufacturing. So that airline industry, aircraft manufacturer had worked hard to improve the, fuel efficiency. However, I think they extracted a lot, and I think they expect a little bit more as well to happen. But as the traffic grows up, cumulatively, I think the emission from the aircraft industry will be increasing. So that is a concern the global community has, that if nothing is done by 2050, aviation could be contributing to a major way in the gas greenhouse emissions. As a result, that's why aviation becomes one of the topic of discussions on these global conferences. There is a concern. I think it's in a lot of other industry there are changes happening. The improvements in terms of reduction in the traffic, change electric cars, for example. The automobile industry is one of the biggest contributors to carbon, carbon dioxide. And with the electric cars, and I think there is a now they're moving forward, that's going to reduce that carbon monoxide from the automobile industry. But in terms of the aviation industry, immediately there are nothing in plan. I think there are some aircraft manufacturers looking at hydrogen fueled aviation, but that is in the horizon, nothing in the horizon immediately next 5 to 10 years. Right. Hopefully, airline industry will be able to come back with some aircraft which are hydrogen fueled or electric fuel.
I think there's some smaller aircraft that are testing, like a Beaver, for example, a Turbo Beaver. See how that will work from an electric point of view. And then, of course, biodegradable fuels, right? Looking more at, using more of that type of fuel and, of course, more efficient engines. But as you say, I think, the concern from the global perspective is the aviation industry is going to grow, not shrink long term, right? In order to meet the needs of the traveling public.
Yes, that's right. That is continue to be, aviation industry is going to grow. It's not, people need to travel. And I think that is going to continue to increase. So that's why the challenge is for the aviation industry to be part of this, trying to reduce GHG emissions. It's to work with other stakeholders as well, trying to see how best we can do that. Airport on their part, doing the best to within the airport environment, trying to minimize the waste or reducing freshwater usage, energy conservation measures they do, or investing in renewable energies to contribute in reduction in this GHG emissions.
Right, and of course, encouraging more electrical vehicles on the ramp and shutting off the APU, right, I guess, would help.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, and then providing support services accordingly. So, earlier we talked about briefly as part of the master plan the importance of economics. So airports directly impact and better enable the local community economic health through its catchment area and often beyond. Yet many people and even political leaders don't fully understand, realize, or appreciate this important consideration. What should airports and their stakeholders be doing, perhaps differently, to build support and to develop tangible partnerships for mutual benefit?
It's always a challenge on the part of the airport and the airlines. I think in the need, importance of the airports generally are felt by various government agencies and public as well. People always have appreciated need for the airport because they use it. But there is a big NIMBY syndrome among the people who live around the airport. They're not in my backyard. But they only involve small percentage of people who are really opposed to the airport, even who people live around it. Because most of the people who live around the airport are the ones who depend on the jobs at the airport. So they are really happy to be, working and living close to the airport. But there is a small community which creates a lot of complaints. So that, having said that, I think the airport's challenge is to, communicate with the politicians, government agencies, and public to show them the importance of the airport, what are the benefits it's bringing in. And I think normally, the airport, the government officials appreciate the importance of the airport. I think I remember quite a few years ago when we were looking at the master plan for Pickering Airport, a second airport in, you know, east of Toronto. And one of the options we were looking at was to close the Pearson Airport and move completely to the Pickering Airport. But the politicians in the surrounding communities in around Pearson were not at all favorable to that proposal. I think the community benefits lots, economic benefits to the community from the airport is tremendous. So I think they really want to support the airport, but because of the fact that some of this public who are affected, you know, rightly by the noise and other environmental issues are communities. So the government officials tend to play two sides actually a little bit, but they normally they do support, they realize the importance of the airport. But for the challenges for the airports and airlines is to communicate, I guess. And that's the reason this master plan vehicles is a very good vehicle to communicate to public some of the benefits, the economic benefits are, so jobs it will be creating, and other benefits it creates. So I think my way of thinking, it's been that the annual open houses, of airport tours and this, you know, master plan presentations to public on a normal, on a regular basis is the best way to get a support from the government and the community.
Excellent. So thank you, Naren. Now, airports and airlines do not always work together for a wide range of reasons. Given the many challenges that you and I have just talked about, how might these relationships evolve or change for a mutual benefit, do you think, or need to change?
That's a very tough, interesting one, Paul. I guess both of them need each other in a way. Yes. Airport needs airlines, and airlines need airports, because both of them have one common customer, that's the public, passengers. They are the common passengers. But still, I think there are always conflicts between the airports and airlines is because of the airlines are the ones who are going to be paying for the facilities, for the facility they use, which airports need. The revenues for the airports come from the airlines along with other concessioners. But on the same token, airlines also need a good airport facility to operate the aircraft. So I think it's my experience has been, you know, there are always friction are there, but communicating between the constant communication between the two parties at the local level and at the headquarter levels, I think works to get us where both the parties want to go. And I think build the support and having a tangible partnership for mutual, the partnerships are for mutual benefit, but it's just a question of there are frictions at times when the rates and landing charges or the terminal charges go up, and somehow need to communicate transparently to the airlines why we do that, especially in the current environment where I think the post-COVID industry is going to go through a major revamp. I think both the airports, airlines, and even the aircraft manufacturer need each other. They need to work together. And I think the government, political community agencies as well, because the impact of that will be felt in the community throughout the region.
Absolutely. Huge impact. I guess we also can note that, you know, COVID resulted in the layoff of many people, and many senior managers have left the industry, right, have retired early. And so the question is, you know, here's an opportunity, I guess, for a restart, given the changed landscape for airlines, airports, and as you mentioned, even aircraft manufacturers to work together for mutual benefit and partnership, right?
Yes.
To grow and make the business profitable for both parties. One of the things we see here is in aircraft, big change in aircraft. So the A220 and the A321 extra long range and the 737 MAX aircraft, flight legs continue to be measured, be stretched, allowing long range international flights like JetBlue's new service to Heathrow from New York. Do you foresee aircraft such as these enabling new point-to-point service and possibly to bypass traditional hub airports like Toronto Pearson or Amsterdam? And how might these aircraft such as these reshape the future of scheduled long-haul international air service?
You know, the new aircraft which are sort of in the horizon are just in the available right now, the Boeing 777X or Airbus 321 XLR, Airbus 220, or Boeing 737 MAX. One of the commonality of all these aircraft are they're very fuel efficient, much more efficient than earlier generation of aircraft. So that is a very good thing to have that. And some of the older workhorse of the industry, what I call workhorse, the 747s, and more recently, the Air 380s, they are now getting also sort of old. They need to be sort of, you know, they're aging, and so could be vulnerable in terms of the industry when revamping with a new type of aircraft coming in. Definitely, some of the older aircraft like MD-80s and 747, we'll have to say goodbye to those kind of aircraft. 777X, I think, is the biggest twin jet aircraft which is coming in the market, but I think likely to be the successor to 747 with about 400 passengers. Has a unique feature also, the foldable wings, you know, but allows it to fold to right angle. So you can fit that aircraft, get the aircraft in a tight situation around the terminal, which is advantage of it is, and also fuel efficiency. It's, there are these 321, largest of any single aisle plane it is.
Yes.
It's a non-stop 5,500 or some miles longer than 737. Definitely has a good long-range capability with less fuel. Only challenge with those 321, I think, is because of being a single aisle, would it be comfortable for long-haul flights? And that is something time will tell with the passengers' experiences. However, otherwise, these two aircraft and even 220s, 500, the stretch versions, will be the new aircraft will be in the marketplace, replacing that. There will be network structures will change, I think, post-pandemic, definitely, with new aircraft coming in capabilities. As you just mentioned, Paul, that, yeah, there will be some more point-to-point service could happen, especially the mid-size airport to mid-size, you know, mid-size cities to mid-size cities. I think there may be some of these direct flights also happening. This hub-and-spoke operations, which were sort of very convenient for the airlines, and as a result, some of the airports which are developed to cater to the hub and spoke operation of the airlines will have to be re-looked at it now with the coming of the new aircraft capable of directing flying directly, a small 200, 300 passenger aircraft. And as well as post-pandemic, how the traffic is going to change is something needs to be seen. You know, there are three different components of traffic are there, what I call business travelers. Yeah. Then there are leisure travelers and there are visiting friends and relatives. The third category, people will continue to go to visit their friends and relatives. That travel is not going to be much affected by pandemic. The fares, if the fares go up because of the increase the cost of operating, may change some of the frequency, how often they go, but it will continue. Business travel, it still remains to be sort of seen, but gradually people need to meet face-to-face to finalize the deals will continue. It may take a little longer.
Yeah.
So eventually business travel will come, you know, even with the higher fares, business travel will continue to be there.
Yeah,
the third, the leisure travel, all these senior citizens flying to different parts of the world, that something needs to be sort of really looked at if post-pandemic, which way it will go. But having said that, you know, that the industry will go through changes with the new aircraft types. There may be some more point-to-point. Airports will also have to be reassessed their role from a hub and spoke. But a country like Canada, I think Toronto Airport is a major airport. Other major cities do not have that much volume of traffic to have a direct flight at times.
Mm-hmm, true.
But, I mean, with the new coming of this, if A321 becomes a very viable single aisle plane, viable for long-haul flights, then I think airport will have to reassess their role. Because then some of the smaller cities will bypass to airports like Toronto to go directly to other smaller cities. But that will be affecting the expansion plan for the airports in the future, I think. For example, if I sort of may get a little guess here, that if that were to happen, the Pearson Airport may have, you know, will be won't be reaching the capacity for long, you know, one of the 5 to 10 years, if that could happen. But eventually there will be a need for a sort of an additional capacity at airports like Pearson, even if this changes happen, because traffic is continuing to grow. So,
well, as the population grows, and as you said, people, especially the younger generation, seem to want to be much more mobile, right? To go and explore the world, not be comfortable staying home. They want to get out, right?
And with this now, with the COVID, people have learned how to be working remotely. So, you know, even with the younger people, there will be some more working remotely will be happening among the younger generation. So people will be traveling and then also still be able to work remotely from wherever destination. So that will create some additional business pleasure travel.
Absolutely. It opens up a whole new world, ultimately, potentially,
yeah,
right?
So
I guess the last question for you today, Naren, is finally, what new technology do you see in development to improve touchless customer service and greater throughput at airports without unduly expanding physical footprints at airports?
I think what they call the next TT, you know, the new experience travel technologies, NEXTT, I think that is a joint initiative of ACI and IATA. It's for the sharing a vision for the future travel. Initially, you know, it was intended to leverage the latest technology development to address the predicted capacity constraint that airports are facing. And that was sort of intended to do that. But having now in with the impact of the COVID, those plans are sort of going to be delayed for another 5 to 10 years, till 10 years, I think. So short-term projections have dramatically changed. So tonight, now the new technology, I think, is really to provide immediate solutions required to mitigate this COVID risk when traveling. That is one of the most important ones. And to improve efficiency for airports and airlines, sort of which have experienced big drops in revenue. So some of the advancements is of what you call off-airport processing activities. You know, also improving customer experience and efficiency with improved processing, and increasing touchless interaction between passengers, airlines, and airport will be the sort of the new concepts of NEXTT, I think, going to be. And which will reduce the customer experience and reduce time spent on processes. Some of the airports are doing that already, I guess, you know, if you've been traveling lately, airports are trying to incorporate touchless technology in their operations. But still, lots need to be done and across industry. So,
fascinating how that has evolved, and I really had a shot in your arm saying, okay, how do we get people through the airport without having to touch things, right? Or gather too closely together. And whether it's, you know, boarding the aircraft or whether it's going through security screening or checking in your bag, right? How do you do all that and maintain some semblance of social distance?
Yeah.
And have less common touch points.
You know, one of the key greater need for connected and contactless processing is this digital identity.
Mm, yes.
I think digital identification will be, I think, when applied, not just for limited to check-in or document checks and self-service, backdrops, access to security points, the border controls, wherever, you know, the risk assessment by boarding. These are the ones, the digital identification completely when done, I think we'll be able to improve the efficiency in this touchless travel. That is where this touchless kiosk technology will have to be sort of implemented at the airport. Like current kiosks which are there could have to be, may have to be converted or so modified for touchless technology. And some additional kiosks may have to be installed at the boarding gates or maybe at the security points or some of these points to enable this sort of processing. So in longer term, will help the process in terms of improving the capacity of the airports. But initially, right now, with the loss of revenue and loss of traffic, is going to be a challenge for airport to invest in this technology.
Yes, especially when you continue to look for ways to stay economically viable, right? I mean, to cover the cost,
right.
And all airports, well, not all, but many airports have lost substantial dollars, right? And need to find a way to be able to recover that. So have airlines, and so have most families, right? So it is an ongoing shared challenge that we're working together. It's amazing what we can accomplish. So, Naren, I would like to thank you very much for being part of our AFCON Aviation WOW podcast, to share with the listeners your vast experience and background. We thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul, for giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts in this aviation industry. I really appreciate it for giving me the opportunity.
Well, thank you for taking part. You're much appreciated. Listeners, stay tuned for our future podcast and have a wonderful day.